Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Right. Today on the SBGAN podcast, hello, listeners. You all right? We will address, with the help of Dr. Jutta Kögelmeier of London's Great Ormond Street Hospital for Sick Children, what some persons might call a first world problem. For millennia, the principal issue with nutrition was, will there be enough? In wealthy nations, at least during the last century, there certainly was enough nutrition. The issues shifted in two directions, one being, will the nutrition reach those who need it? And the other, will some people overfeed themselves? Now a third issue is cropping up in those wealthy nations, and it is, will some people adopt diets that slide into underfeeding? One such diet is that imposed by, and here I'm going to have to ask Dr. Kögelmeier for the appropriate pronunciation. I feel I want to say veganism or veganism. Which do you prefer?
Veganism, vegan diet.
Very good then. One such diet is that imposed by veganism, which abjures, along with quite a bit else, the ingestion of food or drink not derived directly from vegetable sources. Might adherence to strict veganism lead to deficiencies in macronutrients or micronutrients? Well, clearly, yes. Beyond supplementation, since veganism and skepticism toward pills and big pharma often are parabiosed, how can such outcomes be avoided? Dr. Kögelmeier proposes three contributions to the literature in guiding today's chat. These are titled Developing a Food Exchange System for Meal Planning in Vegan Children and Adolescents. A second, Does the Healthy Plate Model Workshop Improve Nutrition Knowledge, Behaviors, and Habits in School-Age Children? The Impact of Workshop on Dietary Habits, original article. And third, Vegan Diet and Nutritional Status in Infants, Children, and Adolescents. A position paper based on a systematic search by the SBGAN Nutrition Committee. Complete PubMed details can be found in the précis of this podcast, accessible through the SBGAN website. Starting with the SBGAN stance toward veganism, summed up as, perhaps all very well for some, but do keep an eye on how things are going for children on a vegan diet. What can professional nutrition counseling offer? And as always with these podcasts, listen and find out. Hi, Jutta. Nice to have you back.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, otherwise healthy children and normal growth and development. Do nutritionally complete vegan diets support normal growth and development in these kids?
So during my time on the SBGAN Nutrition Committee, which only finished very recently, we felt in view of the increasing popularity of vegan diets in the Western world, we felt there was a need to perform a systematic review of the current evidence on the effect of a vegan diet compared to an omnivorous diet, so where children eat everything, meat, dairy product, plant-based foods, on body growth, nutritional adequacy, and laboratory markers in healthy children. And we have published these findings in the 2024 SBGAN position paper on vegan diet and nutritional status in infants, children, and adolescents. And that's one of the papers I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. When we went through the literature, we found that current evidence is inconclusive to determine whether a strictly vegan diet supports normal growth in childhood. Although no significant differences in height or body mass set scores were observed in these children compared to their omnivorous peers. And when I go and refer to a few studies that we came across in this systematic review, one study found a significantly lower BMI standard deviation score in vegan children compared to omnivorous. Five others found no significant difference in weight for height and or BMI for age, although two of them recorded a higher prevalence of being underweight or wasted, and one reported a lower prevalence of obesity in vegan children compared to omnivores. So we could argue, given that we also have an obesity epidemic, there may be some benefits. Only one study assessed other adiposity measures, so they found lower values for fat mass index, standard deviation scores, triceps skin fold, and supra-iliac skin fold standard deviation scores compared to omnivorous children. But there was no difference in lean mass index. So our data did not allow us to determine if professional nutrition advice, for example, has an influence on weight-related parameters, since unfortunately none of the studies we came across went into any detail. So we could simply not provide this information. It doesn't mean these children didn't have any form of nutritional counseling. Among seven selected studies that looked at growth in height, one article found significantly lower height standard deviation scores in vegan school-age children between the age of 5 to 10 compared to omnivorous children, and one showed a lower absolute height in centimeters in adolescents, but it wasn't standardized for age and sex. One also found a significantly higher risk of vegan children being stunted. So these were toddlers and young children, 6 to 23 months of age, compared to omnivorous children at their age. But it was a very crude methodology used. So there was no significant statistical significance after adjustments. And then other studies found no difference in linear growth between vegan and omnivorous children. So in conclusion, there appears to be no substantial difference in growth parameters between vegan children compared to vegetarian children, for example, who still eat dairy products and or eggs, and omnivorous pairs. However, unfortunately, as so often in medicine, particularly in pediatrics, the evidence is still limited, and I think further long-term large cohort studies are really needed to give an appropriate answer.
Jutta, I have to apologize, I think. I believe that I rather loaded the question that I asked you in using the words, do nutritionally complete vegan diets support normal growth and development? If I had left out nutritionally complete, would your answer have differed at all?
It would have been different, but I would have given you a differentiated answer because I would have instantly asked you a question back. What do you understand by a vegan diet? Because there is still a lot of confusion, even amongst health professionals. And is it a vegan diet that is just followed without any form of supervision or some professional knowledge of the parents, carers who provide for the child? Or is it at least a theoretically complete vegan diet?
That takes me well off the fairway. And I think that my golf ball has been lost in the weeds. So I will ask about aspects of assessing nutritional completeness, nutrient growth and development adequacy. I didn't hear you mention something like bone densitometry.
So these are ways of assessing, but I think coming back to the beginning of your question, the difference between a vegan diet and a nutritionally complete vegan diet. And yes, I think therein lies the detail, as so often in life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reason why I brought two other papers with me today, which do refer to concepts that would allow, at least in theory, to create a nutritionally complete diet in children.
So which tools can be used to achieve a theoretically nutritionally complete vegan diet suitable for kids?
Yeah. So a vegan diet as such is not complete and requires micronutrient supplements, at least vitamin
B12. Okay.
Essential nutrients that need to receive special consideration in infants, children, and adolescents following a vegan diet, in addition to vitamin B12, are also iron, calcium, vitamin D, and long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. There is, again, no scientific evidence of any form of education program, specific recommendations, or meal plans followed by families with vegan children that have been shown to be effective to promote adequate growth and prevent nutrient deficiencies. However, reliable and user-friendly meal planning tools can be helpful to ensure an adequate intake of key nutrients. And I think what is also important to say, in the defense of vegan families. And there's good evidence for that, that so-called omnivorous children in this day and age actually have a nutritionally incomplete diet. You know, you could eat
Are you going to take my chips away? No.
I think everything in moderation. Potatoes are healthy and a little bit of healthy fat. But I think it's the balance that makes the difference. So a useful practical approach to design a nutritionally complete vegan diet could be, for example, a food exchange system based on nutrient composition calculations, as, for example, proposed by Manal Puri, and I brought her paper with me today. And to achieve this, the authors identified nutrient-rich plant-based foods and organized them into food exchange groups. So in practice, daily portions for each food exchange group were calculated to ensure that the resulting meal plan was at least 90% of the dietary reference intakes for protein, iron, zinc, calcium, and omega-3 fatty acids, so key nutrients, according to age, sex, and also the physical activity level of the child. So theoretically, as a parent, you could look at your exchange plan and say, okay, today we're cooking this for lunch, we're having this for dinner, this is going to be my child's breakfast, these are my options for snacks. And at the end of the day, I should be able to lean back and think, as long as my child has eaten it, because children are not always reliable eater, but that's I think, is the case across all children, whatever diet they consume. But let's say the child is known to this lifestyle from a young age, following this, then I should be able to lean back as a parent and say, I think I've done well today. There is one problem even with this. The resulting diets will be still deficient in vitamin B12 and vitamin D. And therefore, children, even when following this meal plan, need vitamin B12 and D supplementation. Of note is also something very interesting, and I think therein lies already the crux with children. Adequate calcium intake may require consumption of cruciferous vegetables. So cabbage, for example,
broccoli,
exactly, that many children do not find palatable and would hence find this difficult to achieve in practice because they would have to eat a significant amount. You know, as an adult, I can, to a degree, eat with my head and say, okay, today I just need to get my broccoli in. I love broccoli, but, you know, if I didn't, perhaps that's the cultural background where I was brought up. I think cruciferous plants are very popular throughout the year. So what can be helpful there. So fortified, unsweetened, I'd like to say, because we should consider children's teeth and other negative benefits of having sugar or negative effects of sugary drinks. But an unsweetened, fortified, plant-based beverage and or a separate calcium supplement could be recommended as well, and that would very easily overcome this problem.
Jutta, I'd like to interrupt here in order to say these are diets for persons who are focused, who as parents are focused on ensuring that their children eat vegan. There's a deem that in which it doesn't seem to matter so much because the parents have been vegan since childhood, ever since on their own. And that would, of course, be persons from South Asia, higher caste persons from India. And I wonder if in those cultures where you just cook what your grandmother always put on the table, how do they cope with trace mineral depletion or lack of vitamin B12? Where does somebody who follows a strict Brahmin diet get those micronutrients?
So I think this is a perfect example as if you follow a healthy, balanced vegan diet, which these people have done for centuries,
yes,
you're going to be okay.
Yes, yes.
And I think I often wondered about the vitamin B12, but, you know, I think nowadays we overwash salads, we wash out all the micronutrients that would have been in the soil. The cow is a holy animal in India, so I imagine they probably rummage around in between rice fields. So I think it is not difficult to understand that perhaps vitamin B12 is not so much an issue there. But I think in the Western world, where we're eating perhaps a diet that is not intrinsic to our culture, people are inexperienced. They are not generations of families who follow this eating pattern.
There you go.
And
yes,
we buy also processed foods. And I think just because you're vegan doesn't mean you're not eating processed foods. On the contrary, many of these meat and meat replacements, plant-based meat replacements, are actually of very variable nutrient content. Some are excellent, particularly for growing children, but there are others which are very high in fats, sugar, salt, but very low in protein, and certainly should only be consumed in moderation, like most, if you like, junk food or highly processed foods. I think if your child has this once in a while, that's absolutely fine. There is no evidence to suggest this is harmful, but it's always the dose that makes the difference.
It seems then that children on vegan diets should be counseled, or their parents should be, to make sure that everything the child needs is reaching her or him. But then the question is, should children on vegan diets also be monitored to ensure that they are getting what they need?
So ideally, children on a vegan diet should have regular nutritional counseling, either from a qualified pediatric dietitian or a nutritionist who's got experience in vegan diets in children. And they can not only give advice on the amount or variety of plant-based foods that should be offered, but also on the type and amount of micronutrient supplementation, depending on the child's intake and individual needs. I think particularly at the start of switching from an omnivorous to a vegan diet, if this is a family who chooses to do that and hasn't done so before, when complementary foods are introduced to an infant for the first time, and during periods of rapid growth, parents and families do benefit from this advice to avoid macro and micronutrient deficiencies. I think it's also important, because when we talked about this in the Committee of Nutrition, I think not every healthcare system can provide dietitians and nutritionists to families. And I think some families may be able to pay for this privately if it's not available on their individual healthcare system, but not all. And I think in such circumstance, I think it's also important that there is a public health approach that's adopted to provide clear advice based on evidence-based research and clinical observation. I think most people nowadays have access to the internet. They could find out, or perhaps also educational programs in schools. I mean, there's the last paper I brought was on the healthy plate model, where children received nutritional counseling and education, and it actually made quite a difference to their attitude towards eating. Their sugar consumption, sweet beverage consumption went up. Those that skipped breakfast started to eat breakfast. So it does make a difference, even to young children. So as there is no evidence about the difference in growth pattern between vegan and omnivorous peers, we felt it's even more important that medical practitioners caring for children should be particularly attentive to monitoring height and weight in those children to detect faltering growth early, because there is some concern if the diet is not adequate that these children perhaps don't grow as well as others. So maybe they would also benefit from the supervision of a pediatrician or a health professional, maybe the family GP, who has an understanding of normal growth and development in childhood. As the Espegan Nutrition Committee, we advise that vegan infants, to be safe, should start a daily vitamin B12 supplement. If breastfed by a vitamin B12 deficient mother, or when complementary feeding is started, because that's when breast milk consumption, or if breast milk is not available, a suitable plant-based infant formula is less and less consumed. So to make sure that there is no B12 deficiency due to inappropriate dietary intake. And then, of course, children and adolescents, like adults, should continue to receive B12 throughout their childhood and later in life. What we found quite difficult to comment on is the amount of blood monitoring, because many families would say, but I'm offering my child a healthy vegan diet, my child is thriving and developmentally normal. Why should a child have blood tests, particularly when we know that many so-called omnivorous children also have a nutritionally micronutrient insufficient diet, very commonly, unfortunately, in this day and age. And that's different, I think, from previous generations. But we felt because B12 is such a key nutrient, and if children are deficient, can have such detrimental effects on neurodevelopment, that it should be offered. I think if a parent said, thank you very much, but I do what I'm supposed to do, my child gets fortified food, B12 fortified food, or we're giving a daily supplement, I don't want my child to have a blood test, then I think that would be okay, as long as the family has been offered. But again, I think if I was a parent, I would probably in the beginning definitely, and during periods of rapid growth, I would want to make sure that my child is not B12 deficient and have that checked. And then I think other key nutrients, so vitamin D, iron, calcium, I think that depends very much on this dietetic assessment I mentioned. You know, if a child's diet is adequate, they have their vitamin D and calcium fortified unsweetened plant-based formula, and the diet is otherwise adequately nutritionally complete, then perhaps there is no need to check these key nutrients. But in children who are perhaps poor eaters, not as reliable eaters as others, I think it would make sense to at least offer it.
Well, there we are then. Horses for courses, okay? And there's no size fits all, even in pediatric dietetic medicine.
That's very true. And what I would like to say, perhaps as a final comment for me, would be that we've written a second position paper in which we make recommendations on a practical approach to vegan diets in childhood that's been submitted and is currently under review and will hopefully be published soon in a second position paper following on from the very first one I mentioned very early on.
Right, listeners, there you are. You know it's coming, and keep on the lookout. But it's time to close. And in closing, we have to ask you, or we want to ask you, not we have to ask you, we want to ask you, what song would you like to contribute to the Espigan podcast official library on Spotify of songs?
So musically, I think I was born way too late because I missed the era of the Beatles, but nevertheless, I love them. And the song I chose is Here Comes the Sun by George Harrison, very often called the quiet Beatle, the youngest one. But despite that, and despite being so overpowered by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, he wrote some of the most beautiful Beatles songs, one of which is Here Comes the Sun.
I endorse everything you've said there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.